Well, welcome to another Fair Game podcast. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Lee. How are you?
Good. All right. Today we have another special guest.
Super special. We're thrilled to welcome someone who actually I have known for, let me think, about more than 40 years, maybe close to 50.
Have you known each other that long?
Yes. It's crazy.
Okay, well, introduce our guest first.
Yes, okay. The wonderful Kate Bornstein, a legend and icon in the LGBTQ community, and someone, like I said, who I have known for too many decades.
Hi, Kate. I think he left a letter out, didn't he? Kate, you need to educate Mike.
Hi, you both. How you doing? Oh, there's letters added every day. You can leave them out. You can add them in. You're never wrong
okay.
when you say it.
Okay. All right. So how do you guys... Welcome. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Thank you.
And so how do you guys know each other?
From the ship. I think we first met on the ship when you were
Kate. On the Apollo with L. Ron Hubbard.
I was first mate. Did you get seasick at all when you were there, Mike?
a couple of times, yes.
Like I would have had you scrubbing the decks.
Well, I was a deckhand at the outset. My earliest time on the Apollo in 1973, I was a deckhand. And I was the person who did literally scrub the decks and... You know,
well, why don't you guys explain what the Apollo was?
The Apollo was the flagship. The sea organization was literally on the sea, S-E-A, like in ocean.
Yes.
And we had a couple of ships. We had a boat. The flagship was where L. Ron Hubbard was living, literally living. He had a big suite of cabins aboard the ship. And we were sailing at that time. We were in North Africa and Portugal and the Azores. And we did that little triangle of sails.
And you joined the Sea Org in 1969.
Me, 70.
Okay. And at the time you joined as Al Bornstein.
I was Al. Yep.
Right.
Hey, don't you remember they called me Al? It was Al all the time.
Wait, this was not only Al, this was Lieutenant Al Bornstein.
Right.
Like
can I say bad words?
Yeah, sure. You can say whatever
the
fuck you want.
Fucking right, I was Lieutenant Al Bornstein.
Right.
And I didn't have a great deal of interaction at that time. In fact, I had more interaction with Molly, your wife at the time, than I did with you, because I ended up being in the management side of Scientology organizational hierarchy, and Molly ended up being a senior executive in that realm, and so... I knew her fairly well. Nah, not so much her husband at the time, but I, you know, of course I knew him. Like you're on a ship that's a few hundred feet long with a, you know, 150 or 200 other people, you know, everybody that's there and you interact with everybody, but it wasn't that close relationship that we had.
No. Well, that's true for really anybody in the Sea Org, even if you're married. But just to give some people some context, so you guys were in the Sea Org, you signed million-year contracts, you dedicated your lives, billion-year contracts, you gave up your lives to join the mission of Scientology and the Sea Organization, which was to clear the planet and save the planet, save mankind. And so that's what you both thought you were doing when you joined the Sea Org.
The actual stated mission was to get ethics in this sector of the galaxy.
And what does that exactly mean in layman's terms for listeners?
Nothing.
I mean, if you were to explain it, honestly, no, if you were to try to just explain it in layman's term, what, because people still ask us, like, what is Scientology doing? What is the Sea Org doing? Or what do they think they're doing?
May I, Mike?
Yes.
Okay.
Please. I mean, we should do less talking and more listening.
They hear from me way too much, Kate. You talk, I'll sit and just suck it in.
Tweak what I say. To my understanding, Scientology misuses the word ethics. Ethics to me, and my understanding of ethics, is that they are broad paint strokes of decent behavior.
Right.
Fair play, that sort of thing. Right. Scientology ethics is more a system of morals. Morality is a step down from ethics in terms of trusting the person who's using it. And morality is what's right and what's wrong.
Right.
This is right, this is wrong. That's not ethics, that's morals. Right. And so Scientology ethics was making sure that everybody did what's right, according to what L. Ron Hubbard said what's right, and right, people who were doing anything that's wrong would be punished. And that was our job in the Sea Org, to get that in, starting with this planet.
Right. So you guys thought you were policing the planet, basically, right? I mean, Okay.
Yeah. Saving mankind from the evil.
From themselves,
of,
yes.
Of those who are not ethical.
Yeah.
Right. And so at the time, you joined the Sea Org and you had a baby in the Sea Org?
I didn't personally have the baby.
No, no, you didn't have the baby, but your wife at the time, because children were allowed at that time in the Sea Organization?
They were allowed in the Sea Organization, but they weren't allowed on FLAC. After
what is that?
We found out that Molly was pregnant.
What is FLAC? Meaning at FLAG, they weren't allowed on the premise, like they weren't allowed to have babies at FLAG.
It was a ship.
Oh, okay.
And so like brand new babies weren't allowed on the ship.
Okay.
Young children were, and they usually ended up as Commodore's messengers.
Mm-hmm. Working for L. Ron Hubbard in his personal organization. Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Waiting on him hand and foot. Right. Yeah. But as soon as we found out that Molly was pregnant, we were fired out on a mission to set up what was called the Flag Operations Liaison Office in the U.S., which became West U.S. We went to L.A., and it had been what was called a Continental Liaison Office, but that got changed into a Flag Operations Liaison Office. And Molly and I spent a month there setting that up. And then we flew to New York and put a whole new Sea Org unit in New York, upstairs from the New York Org.
Okay. And then so I just want to just bring people up to date so we don't get, people are not confused. In 1986, you identified as gender nonconforming, right? And you don't call yourself a woman, you don't call yourself a man, but you had sex reassignment surgery, right?
Yeah. I thought I was a woman for the longest time because, you know, what else are you going to be? I'm not a man. I knew that. And the only other choice was woman.
Right.
So I did what medical profession said at those days, followed the cattle chute through sex change surgeries, that's what they called it back then.
Sure.
And I became a woman. And it didn't take me long to realize that it was as much work trying to be a woman as it had been for me trying to be a man. And so finally, I said, fuck it, I'm not a woman, I'm not a man.
Right.
Today, that's what's known as non-binary. Or it can be called gender nonconforming. You're correct.
Okay. When you were in Scientology, did this ever come up for you?
Sorry.
It's okay. So why are you laughing?
It was my wants handled. That's what I wanted handled more than anything. I wanted to stop wanting to be a woman.
Because
that was such a freaky thing. Because that was a perversion. I grew up believing that. There was no role model. There was no organization. There was no book. There was nothing that said it's okay to be trans.
Sure. And
word
and
wasn't even around.
And also we should, I want to go over a few things here. It's not just that there wasn't anything in Scientology. As a matter of fact, Scientology is homophobic amongst many other things that they are. But in Dianetics as well, you know, because these are mandatory reading assignments for all Scientologists, parishioners, and Sea Org members. So we all learn the same thing. But in Dianetics, the modern science of mental health, as L. Ron Hubbard wrote, the sexual pervert, this is in Dianetics.
That was me.
Mike, is this from the actual book?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, all right. So should I just read this?
Well, sure. He just says the sexual pervert.
Yeah.
Includes any and all forms of deviation in dynamic two, which is the dynamic of family and sex, such as homosexuality, lesbianism, sexual sadism, etc. And that person is actually quite ill physically. Perversion as an illness has so many manifestations that it must be spread through the entire gamut of classes.
Well, this, I was all three of those and then some.
Right. Well, yeah, but here's the thing. You know, we could laugh about it now. However, the mental damage that this does to somebody growing up into Scientology and reading this and believing this is abusive, to say the least.
I would say it's more of a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. When I read that, it was, someone knows how fucked up I really am.
Right, right.
Good. Maybe this is where I will be able to be helped.
Right.
And where the fucked up, real fucked upness comes is it solidifies the understanding that you're evil because the way you love, the way you like to present.
The way you were born. Yeah.
Yeah.
Further, in the second book that you're forced to read, is called Science of Survival. And just to explain very quickly, Scientology has a scale of which they measure people, if they're worth talking to or not talking to, and below a certain point, and they just have random numbers, right? So if you're below 2.0 in this tone scale, you're basically dead as a person.
Dying.
You're dying. You're
dying,
right.
You're surviving if you're above 2.0. You're dying if you're below 2.0. And you go all the way down to death and below, in fact.
Right. You could be alive, but... you could be dead, but physically, like, you could be even lower on the scale as a spiritual
Correct.
Being, per L. Ron Hubbard.
Exactly.
One of the worst, and we all learned this pretty early on. I mean, you got children running around, you know, touting this nonsense, right? Because, you know, the Scientology parents teach this to their kids, and then as soon as they could read, they're forced to read this stuff. But the worst, worst tone to be on the scale is labeled as 1.1, and that's covert. That's like the person.
Covert hostility.
What?
Covert hostility.
And they have a picture of like a smiling face while they have like they're stabbing you in the back. Okay. So the worst kind of person, the worst, is a 1.1. Okay. And this is where L. Ron Hubbard classifies homosexuality. 1.1 on this tone scale. And I just want to, could I read this, Mike? Because this part?
Sure.
Okay. There are only two answers for the handling of people from 2.0 down on the scale, neither one which has anything to do with reasoning with them or listening to their justification of their acts. The first is to raise them on the tone scale, blah, blah, blah. The other is to dispose, the other is to dispose of them quietly and without sorrow. Adders are safe bedmates compared to people on the lower bands on the tone scale. not all the beauty, nor the handsomeness, nor artificial social value, nor property can atone for the vicious damage such people do to sane men and women. The sudden and abrupt deletion of all individuals occupying the lower bands of the tone scale from the social order would result in an almost instant rise in the cultural tone and would interrupt the dwindling spiral into which any society may have entered. A Venezuelan dictator once decided to stop leprosy. He saw that most lepers in his country were also beggars. By the simple expedient of collecting and destroying all of the beggars in Venezuela, an end was put to leprosy in that country. Did you fucking imagine? So, this is the this is what you're raised with in Scientology. The shame that you feel is so astronomical, and where he plots this on the tone scale, is just evil. I don't have another word for it. Is there anything else, Mike, you want to add to this?
Well, I just want to add that.
Oh, this is the I love this part about the auditing out homosexuality. Yeah, so go ahead, Mike.
I wouldn't read this one.
Go ahead.
Here's what I recommend, Leah. I took these quotes from a post I did on my blog called Scientology. Is Scientology homophobic or Scientology and homophobia? And all of these quotes are in there, and I will add a link to that on the fairgamepodcast.com website and on my blog when we air Kate's episode, so that people can go and read these things for themselves, because this is not, there is a lot more to this and a lot more that Hubbard says. And despite the fact that Scientology today tries to pretend that they are not homophobic, this is the reality of Scientology. You can't change the words of L. Ron Hubbard. L. Ron Hubbard says that homosexuality, lesbianism, whatever, any perversion is all bad stuff that is evil in its fundamental foundation, and that it must be gotten rid of, and that these people must be gotten rid of, and the only hope they have is to get Scientology auditing. And frankly, Scientology, this is no different than the pray the gay away idea that some wild Christian churches have. We can cure people of their homosexuality. We can cure people of being gay. It's complete and utter ancient, old bullshit that was founded in the 50s when Hubbard thought he was, the king of knowing all about man and his self, and kind of followed a lot of the thinking of that time. And the difficulty is, while the profession of understanding the mind, psychiatry, psychology, sociology, whatever, continues to advance in their understanding, Scientology is stuck.
Right.
It's stuck with the words of L. Ron Hubbard. So if L. Ron Hubbard says gay is bad and gay is evil, it's never going to change.
Right.
That's the law. That's
right,
the
because there's Scientology policy that says Scientology policy doesn't change.
Right. And Hubbard's books can't change. He's dead and gone, and he never came back. So Scientology is stuck with that. And though nowadays people are more enlightened about the reality of people's choices in their sex life or love or gender, Scientology is trying desperately to pretend that they too are enlightened and have caught up, but they don't.
Right.
They just pretend.
And we know. Yes, exactly. Kate, I want to know what were the types of auditing or what was Scientology doing with you to try to audit you know, the gay out of you? What were the things that you were forced to endure?
Well, when I was living as a man, mm-hmm. I was heterosexual. I loved women madly. Yeah. Just yay. I still do. Yeah. Back when Hubbard was growing up, the word transsexual didn't exist. It didn't really come into play into the language until the 60s.
Right.
So you don't see that in the literature. But as Mike said earlier, anything on the second dynamic, love, sex, family. Mm-hmm. And sex is a word that can be in mostly used two ways, meaning the act, mm-hmm. Or meaning gender. Mm-hmm. And they didn't really distinguish that. When I first came into Scientology, day one, I was on a journey looking to see how I could save the world, because I was a hippie boy and that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I was running away from my own issues. And the one of the first questions I asked in the mission in Denver, it was, mm-hmm. they didn't call them franchises, it was a mission, mm-hmm. Was they told me, you are not your body. You're not your mind.
Right.
You are a spiritual being of pure thought. We call it a thetan. Mm-hmm. Are there male thetans and female thetans? Hmm. They said, no, no, no. Mm-hmm. Male and female is for meat bodies. Thetans aren't male or female. And I went, this is what I've been looking for all my fucking life.
Right.
And then I found out, they don't pay attention to that. Right. If you're gay, you're basically saying that you are your body. And because you're in a male body, you must be attracted to females. If you're in what is called a male body, that is grown with a penis, let's say, you grew up with a penis and you had XY chromosomes, let's say, you're supposed to live as a boy and as a man.
Right.
That's all body stuff. It's a paradox that they don't address. Right. And when you call them out on it, they'll run away from the question.
Right.
When I was trying to address this in auditing, there wasn't the word. I got in 1970. Right. Transsexuality was known by that mm-hmm. time as a word, but it wasn't in Scientology. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like, I think I'm transsexual. It's, I want to be a woman.
Right.
I addressed this in pretty much every rundown I got in the grades, in power. Finally, about maybe a couple of months before I left, I got one of the L's. I bought myself an L. I bought L12.
Okay, and that just does. These are Scientology processes, just so mm-hmm. everybody knows that Kate's referring to. So you bought yourself an L, and how much was one of those?
Back then, $10,000.
Nothing.
I'd gotten an inheritance.
You got a deal back then.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah.
That's 40. It's 40.
And
now.
What was Scientology promising? It's 40,000, right? An L, Mike?
Yeah. Is it? Yeah.
And what are the L's? What was the L promising you? What was it? What was the promise made?
I had been a flag service consultant, a salesman, for about a year and a half, 2 years at that point. And the way I was selling the L's was the way David Mayo had briefed us on them. David Mayo was the most highly trained technical expert on the planet in those days. And he briefed us. He said, L10 is all about doing, L11 is all about having, and L12 is all about being. And the end phenomenon, according to David Mayo, was you could be whatever you wanted to be whenever you wanted to be it. I thought, oh, boy, could I use that. And I got to say it worked. Because from that day forward, I moved forward with being and expressing myself the way I've always wanted to.
Right.
I think the reason that it, quote unquote, worked for me is that that's what I wanted more than anything else in my life. I was like 30 years old, and I was beating my head against the wall, knowing I wasn't a man, and so figuring I must be a woman, but I couldn't be, and it was perverted, it was evil. All I wanted to do was be that. And when you name your desire to the degree that I was, the degree of fineness that I was naming my desire, and you say, well, all I have to do is this and I'll have it, on L12, I'll spend every penny I had on it. Well, I think I just gave myself permission to do it. I don't really think it had much to do with the L. I joke and say that it worked, but I think it was about giving myself permission. Oh, now I've had L12. I can be anything I want. It's like the drug rundown, free from the harmful effects of drugs and alcohol and free from the need to take them. Oh, I'm free from the harmful effect. I can drink as much as I want and it won't affect me. Woohoo! You know?
Right.
You talk yourself into the end phenomenon.
Exactly.
Kate, so how long were you in Scientology and what ultimately made you leave? I don't know if that was answered already.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
I got into Scientology in 1970 and I left in 1982. So 12 years.
And what was the thing? I mean, I know it's not just one thing, it's a lot of little things and sometimes a lot of big things, and then something small happens and it's like, okay, that's it. But what was it for you?
Was a combination of a couple of things. I was a flag servant service consultant, a salesman for Flag. I was selling the highest levels processing of all Scientology.
Yeah.
And I was in Europe at the time on tour.
Yeah.
And any sales in Europe at that point went into, what was it, the Religious Research Foundation? What was it, Mike?
Yeah, one of those Scientology things.
It was a shell company that they could pay into that you wouldn't have to pay taxes on. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Hubbard wasn't at all connected to that because he would then, you know, be able to be taxed. They would be able to find this out. So we just, Religious Research Foundation, make out the check to that. And I was depositing money one day in Zurich into the Religious Research Foundation. And this clerk comes up to me, taps me on the shoulder, says, excuse me, sir, the president of the bank would like to speak with you. And I'm, because this is the Swiss banking conspiracy. I know there's something bad here. And I said, oh, fine. Let this guy escort me to this huge, beautiful office. And behind the desk across the room from me was this little old guy. I mean, look, imagine like Ebenezer Scrooge. That's what was sitting behind the desk.
Right, right.
And to my surprise, he smiled this big smile. Swiss bankers don't smile. He smiled this big smile, got up, came around in front of his desk, walked over to me, extended his hand, said, Mr. L. Ron Hubbard, we are delighted that you're finally visiting our bank. We appreciate your business all these years. I said, oh, my God, some suppressive person has set up Ron. And I said, oh, excuse me, I'm not this Mr. that you're referring to. And he went pale. He had obviously violated some Swiss banking law. And we'd, oh, what a funny mistake. And I left. and got myself to a payphone and reported what was happening. And I got sent to St. Hill for debrief. I was there for 3 days debriefing. They flew me back to Flag, to Florida.
These are all Scientology locations of,
Right,
okay, Scientology buildings, yeah.
I got off the plane in Florida, and these seven young men in Sea Org uniform were meeting me, and I thought to myself, ha-ha, I'm a hero. They're welcoming me back. I saved L. Ron Hubbard from this plot. And they were all stern, and they were all like lieutenant commanders and commanders. And I'm going, I knew every Flag officer, and there were only 50 people in Scientology who outranked me in those days. Mm-hmm. And they told me they were part of the financial police, never heard of that group, and they were going to escort me back to Flag. Make the story short, I ended up in what's called a gangbang security check. Sitting across the table from someone who was operating the e-meter, two big guys behind me on either side of me, two big guys on either side of him, and a big guy standing at the door. And the first question out of their mouth was, what government are you working for?
Now, we're talking about a Scientology interrogation on the Scientology lie detector, their meter. And so now they're accusing you of being
a foreign agent.
Okay.
All right. Mm-hmm. And after hours and hours and hours, and they weren't getting any reads at all, and they finally said, all right, we're going to give you a choice. You're going to be on this newly formed thing we have called the Rehabilitation Project Force. And they described it to me. I'm sure you've described it to your listeners before, sleeping on a hard floor, eating only what's left over after everybody else has eaten off their plates after they've left, only can talk with other members of the Rehabilitation Project Force. Lots of, it was terrible. And
so you went to the Scientology punishment camp?
No.
This is what they were offering to you.
Yeah. Yep. Or you will be excommunicated for the rest of your lifetimes. And this guy said with a straight face to me, he's going to live into the future as a hero, and I'm going to end up as a body Thetan on the toe of some bum. And I went, holy shit.
Good God.
Holy shit. And I realized, you know what? I bet you it was his money. That's the only reason that this would be going on.
Right.
And I said, okay, you excommunicate me.
Right.
And they did.
And that was it.
Yeah.
And then your daughter remained in Scientology in the Sea Org?
Yeah. She was 9 years old at that point.
Okay. And was she in the Sea Org or just in Scientology as a parishioner?
She was the daughter of Molly Baxter, was Bornstein. And there wasn't at that time young people joining the Sea Org.
Okay. Yeah.
She was a Scientologist by default because her parents were.
Got you. And did Scientology then go after you, or they just left you alone?
They left me alone, and that puzzled me.
Right.
Until I, realized I ended up like years later, years and decades later, finally writing about this shit. I wrote a book, a memoir in which I talked about all of this stuff. And they didn't come after me for that either.
Right.
And all I can figure is that their reasoning is that this Bornstein is such a freak, no one's going to believe her anyway. What a pervert. Mm-hmm. I mean, my book is really nice and pornographic. You know, when it gets down to it, it's blowjobs on every other page.
But are you talking about the book you wrote on Scientology?
Yeah.
Okay, and the name of that book is A Queer and Pleasant Danger. The true story of a nice Jewish boy who joins the Church of Scientology and leaves 12 years later to become the lovely lady she is today. Yeah. Which is amazing.
What a title.
And by the way, you've written a few books, and we should mention your website is katebornstein.com. Yep. And this will be all on the website, right, Mike?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great.
All and links to all the books. All the
good. Okay.
Books. She has like 6 of them, I think.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, so you wrote your book.
They didn't come after me. And this was the days before the internet. It was 1982. Mm-hmm. There weren't phone trees. The people who had left weren't in touch with each other.
Right.
We were just out there on our own, quivering.
Right, right. And then what happened?
South Park.
Okay.
South Park came out with their Trapped in the Closet episode in which they revealed the big secret of OT3.
And this is like the big confidential levels of Scientology, everybody, that Scientology makes you sign contracts for. If you tell the secrets of these upper confidential levels, you have to pay $100,000 or something for each time you talk about these confidential levels. And they have brainwashed us all into believing that if we gave up the information of what is contained in these upper levels, that you would give somebody cancer and they would die if they weren't prepared for the secrets that were going to be revealed to them in Scientology. Sorry, go ahead, Kate.
Yeah. And so South Park did their South Park thing about this.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, they're going to be shut down now. And they weren't. Right. And they got away with it.
Right.
And that was, to me and to a whole lot of other people, mm-hmm. a big message of, maybe I can start talking about this stuff. Maybe I won't get...
Fair game? Right.
Fair-gamed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they did fair game the creators and of South Park.
Yeah,
Scientology,
they did.
Majorly.
They did.
But
it just didn't work.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, Trey Parker and
Matt Stone. Yeah.
Basically said, go ahead. The more you do to us, the more we'll put it on our show.
Right.
And they did subsequently put more stuff on South Park about Scientology, and Scientology is scared shitless of South Park. Believe me.
Right.
They don't want to do anything to those guys because they know they're going to end up in another episode, and it's going. And so you're right, Kate. And it's very interesting because I've never thought about this before. Those guys were sort of the model that now many people have followed of saying, you know what? We are just going to say what the truth is. And if you want to come after us, we're going to tell more truth. We're just going to talk about what you're doing now. We're going to talk about how you respond. And, you know, we did that on the Aftermath basically every week.
Mm-hmm.
We showed the idiotic letters. We showed the responses. We showed the PIs. We showed all of this stuff. And I'm sort of happy that you brought that up because I think that those guys don't get enough credit for having just sort of stood and said, come and get us, go ahead, make my day. I'm going to fuck with you even worse.
Agreed.
Yeah. And they did. And, that filled me with some courage. It's the first time anybody had stood up to them and mostly got away with it.
Right. Right. And what did it give you courage to do?
I wanted to get back in touch with my daughter,
right,
Jessica. I wanted her to let her know what happened. I mean, I didn't want to pull any punches. I didn't want to sugarcoat anything. I've led I've led a seedy life by most people's standards. But I wanted her to know. I wanted her to know what I did, how I grew up, what I did in Scientology, how I left, and what happened, and why I went through a sex change, why I was living as a woman, and then why I'm saying I'm not a woman either. I wanted her to know this. But the biggest thing, I had been diagnosed with leukemia in 1997. And it's the kind that you can pass on. And I wanted to get word to her that, hey, honey, 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 get yourself checked. And there was no way to get any word. I didn't even know where she was. So I wanted to let her know that. And I was too scared to say anything. But finally, after South Park, what year was that? Do you remember, Mike?
No, but I'll look it up, and I'll include a link to that too on the website.
Cool. It hit me. You know what? I could write a memoir about this. And Beacon Press, bless their hearts, took me on, and we had so many lawyers reading what I wrote, and I was very careful not to be mean to people. It was just as simple as that. I didn't want to be mean. And do I tell lies in the book? Yeah. And then I say, that was a lie. So.
What? I don't understand. I'm sorry. I just want to clarify. What does that mean? You tell lies in the book?
Well, you know, when you're talking about yourself, you exaggerate or something. I did that in the book. And then I said, I just exaggerated. That isn't really the truth.
Okay.
So by admitting that I have a tendency to lie,
I don't know if we're using this word correctly. Are we? Are we classifying this?
Well, no, not strictly.
Okay.
Not strictly, because if you admit that you lie, you're not really a liar. If you say something to create an effect, and then you say, look, that, you know, I'm the greatest 10-pin bowler in the history of the universe. And then you say, well, you know, that's not really true.
Yeah.
That's hardly a lie. That's a form of expressing yourself to create an effect. And that's different than lying, where you're actually saying something that you're trying to get people to believe about you that is not true, and never saying that's not true, but just saying, I want you to believe this about me, and it isn't true. So, yeah, I think because Scientology is going to turn around and say, see, Kate Bornstein talked to Leah Remini and Mike Rinder, and she admits that she lies about everything and lies about herself and lies about her experiences, and she's just a liar. And I don't want to give them the opportunity
to do that. Even though we're being tongue-in-cheek, it will be taken out of context and used against you. So I just assume we pick up from where we left off about your daughter.
Fair enough.
Okay, so you, because I don't want to discredit the beautiful person that you are with the fucking bullshit that they pull. So let's not even give them that.
Before I sat down to write the book, I got myself a tattoo on the back of my hand, and it's a quote from Harry Potter, and it says, I must not tell lies.
Right.
And I wrote my book with that as my motto.
Right.
And I didn't. And I think why they have stayed away from me all this time, why they haven't come after me, is again because by their Judeo-Christian 1930s morality that L. Ron Hubbard pumped into Scientology, by that, I am such a freaking pervert that no one would want to read me, no one would believe me. They left me alone, completely alone. Knock fucking wood.
right.
I have a slightly different take on that, Kate. I think that they left you alone because they are deathly afraid of being painted as homophobic. They do not in under any circumstances like that moniker. They feel like they are fighting that image constantly. And to take you on as quite an icon in this world and friends with Caitlyn Jenner, and like, you have a lot of, you have a strong voice that is a voice in a community that Scientology is terrified of. Scientology is terrified of the gay community. Believe me, they are. And they should be, because they're just like the Westboro Baptist Church. They're no different. They're, mm-hmm. They are anti-gay. Anti. Totally. And they
except
don't
Westboro,
want a fight.
Westboro, even, but they have at least they're vile enough to at least admit that they're vile.
Correct.
And prejudiced and bigoted, where Scientology pretends that they're not. And that they don't teach that.
This is what I don't get. Yeah. And maybe either of you could help me on this. We're supposed to be thetans. We are not
spirits.
Bodies. Spirits.
Yes.
So what is gay? What is heterosexual?
Kate, look, don't try and make sense out of Scientology.
Exactly.
By now you should know that you cannot reconcile concepts and ideas that are presented as fact in Scientology, because they contradict one another.
But also the truth of the matter is, you can believe what you want to believe, right? That's really not even the issue. Is for me, Scientology just pretends that they don't believe these things. And it's not a faith-based religion. It's a business for profit. Criminal. I don't even want to get into it. I want to stay on Kate's story. So, Kate, you go to try to see your daughter.
Where did we get that from? Wait.
Didn't you try to see your daughter? I thought...
That comes much, much later.
Okay.
Because
you were before we started talking in this area here about you were talking about you were trying to get in touch with your daughter.
Yeah, trying to get in touch with her. I wrote letters. She had been writing letters to my mom and sending her photographs. Okay. My mom would send her money. I'm pretty sure that's why she was doing it.
Okay.
And I had an address in Florida for her, and I wrote, and letters just kept coming back to me, return to sender.
Right.
Then after my mom died, I had no way of knowing how to get in touch with Jessica, so I kind of gave up.
Right.
And I figured, okay, I write books. People will buy my fucking books. Great. I have to write a book about this to get in touch with my daughter. And that's what the whole book is. It's a love letter to my daughter. And I understand I have grandchildren as well. And it's a love letter to them.
Right.
And I'm sure she hasn't read it. I'm sure of that.
Right.
But then, when was it? Was it when was I Am Kate? I Am...
It was like 2016.
Yeah. It was during the campaign of Hillary versus Trump. That's right. The book came out in 2012, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then in 2015, Caitlyn Jenner had season one of a show called I Am Kate.
Mm-hmm.
I was on season two, which is 2016, and I got on a bus with like six trans women and me, and one of the trans women was Caitlyn Jenner, and I told them my story about Jessica and how I wanted to get in touch with her. And Caitlyn, bless her heart, she's a champion through and through. She champions people. Mm-hmm. And she heard this and, well, Kate, well, what we've got to do then is we've got to go in there and see her. Well,
mm-hmm.
I'm Caitlin Jenner. Well, they're not going to throw me out. And so she offered to take me to wherever Jessica was. And that's, Mike, that's when I called you, got in touch with you, and I said, do you know where she is? I've got a chance. You know, Caitlin Jenner wants to take me. And you told me, you did some digging and you found out that she was posted in the LA org at that point on a garrison mission.
That's right.
Yeah. And so Caitlin Jenner, I climbed into Caitlin Jenner's huge Cadillac Escalade and we drove into the empty parking lot of the LA org. What could be more obvious? And walked in together and asked for Jessica.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know who Caitlin was. They had no idea.
Sure.
And they certainly didn't know who I was. So they said, okay, just if you wait here, we'll see.
Sure.
We'll get it. They got our names, you know, Caitlin Jenner and Kate Bornstein. And we waited and 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 waited. And finally, someone came down. Would you like some tea? Would you like a little water? I'm afraid Jessica is not available to see anyone just now. And that was it.
And so you never heard from her?
No.
And was that your last attempt to see her?
Yeah.
Right. So she really, I mean, and people should understand that, you know, once you leave Scientology, you don't necessarily even have to do anything grand to be on Scientology's enemy list. But it is, once again, devastating to the families that are torn apart simply because Jessica, like you, like me, like Mike, were taught to believe that you are dangerous to be connected to, dangerous to know. And this is the work of an organization calling itself a church, once again.
It's repeated how homophobic Scientology is. That's kind of known now. That's out there. But that includes what's called transphobia,
mm-hmm.
which is the same kind of anger and hatred and vitriolic feelings about people who refuse to live the sex they were assigned at birth.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only are they homophobic, they're transphobic.
Sure.
And that's something to know. I was thinking about coming on the show, and I was thinking, you know, like, what do we have in common? What do the three of us have in common? We know how not to live our lives.
Hmm.
We know that being mean, lying, scrambling around, and like sacrificing friends, family,
mm-hmm.
it is not worth it. And so we learn how to live better lives. We've got a standard now that most people don't have. We've been at the bottom of the barrel, and we said no to that.
Right.
We've been terrible people. And we finally said no to that. And thank goodness we did. We've changed. And speaking with ex-Scientologists, pretty much one for one that I've met, have given up being mean to each other.
Yes, we've had to let go of the business of hate.
Yeah.
And judgment and bigotry. And we've, you know, yes, you're right. I mean, and it's not just Scientology. It's holding on to these ideologies that destroy yourself, your heart, your relationships with your sons and your daughters, your mother's and your father's, and it's not worth it. It's not worth it to hold on to these beliefs that really add nothing to the world in a positive manner. You're right. We do have that in common. But I think most people are good. Kate, I do believe that there has been an education, there's been an awakening in a lot of areas, and I think people are changing for the better. I have to believe that. We have to have faith.
On another level,
yeah,
of what we've learned as ex-Scientologists. Coming into Scientology, all I wanted was the answer to the world's right. problems.
Right. That's it?
And on the front door of the mission in Denver was a poster. It said, "Abandon your tedious search. The answers have been found."
Right.
And the thing about Scientology is they have all the answers.
They claim, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And they do. And if you stay in that
that's
bubble,
what they're selling. Well, that's what they're selling. It's one thing if it's faith, Kate, but it's not faith. It costs a lot of money. It costs your time. It costs your family. It costs your sanity. There's a lot at stake here that with Scientology in comparison to having a real religion in your life, a faith that doesn't demand that you give up your whole life, your life savings, your kids, your mothers, your fathers. They don't have most real churches don't have a part of the organization that goes out to purposely destroy your life. So, big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you're in that bubble, mm-hmm. you believe you've got access to all the answers.
Totally.
You believe that.
Yes.
I know what to do because completely. All I have to do is what? All right. Getting out of Scientology, I've had to give up on this idea of kowtowing to authority.
Sure.
And look at our country, the United States of America these days. There are people who follow the authoritarian president we've got what's the word?
Fervor.
Thank you. That we followed L. Ron Hubbard. And it's because they need answers. They need to be told, no, I know what's right. Just follow me and you're good. And I know some ex-Scientologists who are very into Trump. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Of course they are. Mm-hmm. Because they haven't gotten themselves away from that need to find answers.
Right.
I have, and a bunch of other ex-Scientologists that I do know have. And it's a scary place going, sure. Well, I don't have answers, and I don't know anybody who does. And I'm just going to stumble along and try not to be mean to people, and I'll get through life, And I think that's the biggest thing I learned from Scientology. Learn to be free of the need for answers.
Right.
And learn to just not be mean to people.
Beautiful.
I love that.
Me too.
I love that. My all my love to you, Kate. You're a remarkable example of what a really good person can be.
Thank you. And here's another thing I learned. The truth of the statement, it takes one to know one. Okay, you wouldn't see that in me, you wouldn't say that of me, if you didn't have that in your heart yourself. That's the way it works. You wouldn't recognize it. So it's good to see you both. Really good to see you both. You're both too. Such good people, doing such good work. Bless
and to
hearts.
You. And to you, Kate,
thank you so
honestly.
Much.
Thank you for all that you do. God bless you.
Bless.
Thanks for listening, you guys. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.